So last week we did James chapter 3, and during that time we talked about the tongue and what you think, what you say is kind of a gear shift knob that connects you with one of two different powertrains. One's the world and demons, and the other is God and the resurrected power of Jesus. And that powertrain, there's really not a mixer that gives you part of each. It's one or the other. We talked about that last week. And this whole book, James, is about winning at life. You win at life by walking in faith and the wisdom of God. And the way you choose God's wisdom instead of the world's wisdom is believe, think, do. You can believe the world, think the world, and then do the world, or you can believe God, think God, and do things of God. That's kind of the deal we did last week. And during the course of that, we talked about this verse that said, "The tongue is so set among our members that it defiles the whole body and sets on fire the course of nature and is set on fire by hell." This hell word is the word Gehenna, and we talked about how it is a actual literal valley in the Jerusalem area, and that's where the refuse heap and the sewage and the burning carcasses, that we would see worms and smoke and fire. And the children of Israel even went down there and sacrificed their children when they went into paganism. So it's a picture of evil. And the question you have to ask yourself when you give a metaphorical picture like that is, what does that represent? What does that stand for? So I told you I'd give you some more color on that today as a starter. So let's look at a couple things there. If you would, look at Matthew 10:28 with me. And I'm going to show you something that I think will hopefully cement in the idea that this picture of death, destruction, worms, nastiness, and so forth is not necessarily Hades or the lake of fire in the sense of a permanent place forever. That's usually understood. But verse 28 says, "Do not fear those who kill the body but cannot kill the soul, but rather fear him who is able to destroy both soul and body in hell." That word hell there, as typically is the case, is Gehenna. So let me ask you a question. How many of you think that physical bodies go to Hades, what we think of normally as hell, physical bodies? Has anybody ever been to a funeral and they say, "Obviously, this is a wicked guy because his body just kind of disappeared. We presume it's in hell." Anybody ever have that experience? Anybody ever read about that experience? Okay. So we're all pretty confident, aren't we, that bodies don't go into the next world? We know there's three exceptions to that. Enoch and Elijah were in their bodies and they went to the next world. A lot of people think the two witnesses in Revelation might be them, because it's appointed unto man once to die, you know. And Jesus, who had already died and had a resurrected body. So he's the first fruits of resurrection. So we know we will have bodies in the new earth, but it's going to be a new kind of body, a spiritual body. It's not going to be this body. This one turns back into dust, dust to dust, right? So bodies don't go to hell in the traditional sense of the way we think about it. So this is obviously talking about something else, right? Gehenna. So let me ask you this. Can a physical body go into the literal valley of Hinnom, where the norm is for there to be carcasses burning? Well, absolutely it can. And in fact, in the history of Israel, it did. This valley of Tophet, if you read in Jeremiah says they're going to have so many deaths when Babylonians come in, they're not even going to be able to bury them. They're just going to put them in the valley of Tophet, the Hinnom Valley, Gehenna, and just burn them, because there are going to be so many people die. And then pretty much right after that, he says that Jeremiah 29:11 verse, "I know the plans I have for you, plans for blessing and not cursing," and all that sort of thing. Everybody loves that bumper sticker, right? Everybody wants that on their t-shirt. It usually doesn't say, "Most of you are going to hell, but I have plans for you," you know, for blessing and not cursing. But if you translate Gehenna into hell all the time, then that's what Jeremiah would be saying. It's a wonderful thing that so many of you are going to hell. Well, you know, that's a that doesn't work for us, right? And that's because this picture of Gehenna, normally, I would say, is not necessarily intended to mean the place you go when you die. So let's look at another situation where this, I think, comes clear, and that's in Mark 9. I love this passage. I love it so much. Bear in mind that this is Peter's gospel. And so Peter is writing this sort of biographical information about himself and his friends. And it's so amazing to me that these guys had the humility to write something about what idiots they were when in Jesus' presence. What a fantastic testimony this is. Okay, here we go. Then he came to Capernaum, his headquarters city on the north shore of the Sea of Galilee. 9:33. Then he came to Capernaum, and when he was in the house, he asked them, "What was it you disputed among yourselves on the road?" So he knew that they were having an argument, and he asked them, "What were you arguing about?" But they kept silent. For on the road they had disputed among themselves who would be the greatest. So what they're arguing about is when Jesus takes over as king of Israel, mashes all the Romans, they're knocked out of the picture, they're deported from Israel, and we are the guys who won, who's going to get to be the vice president? Who's going to be secretary of state? Oh, I'm going to be Secretary of State. You're going to be Secretary of Garbage Pickup. You're going to be the bottom. I'm going to be the top. No, that's not me. Okay, this is their dispute. And they kind of know that Jesus wouldn't approve, so they just don't say anything. Of course, Jesus knows what they were arguing about. So he sat down, and he calls the 12. So this is the inner guys, his top circle, his main lieutenants, the guys he called to him because they're zealots and they're willing to die, all but one. And he says to them, "If anyone desires to be first, he shall be last of all and servant of all." Now, if you're sitting there and you're one of those guys, what are you thinking right now? Are you thinking, "Oh, awesome, I'm getting straightened out"? Is that normal human behavior to think that? Or are you thinking, "We're going to find a way to work this around, okay? This has got to be fit into our paradigm somehow. We're gonna make this work, okay?" And he says, "If anyone desires to be first, he shall be last of all." Then he took a little child. Says, "Hey, little child here." So there's 12 guys around him. And he says, "Hey, little child, come over here." Now, children were not, to be seen and not heard in adult company and most of the time of the world. To my knowledge, we have the only societies that have ever been where the children kind of rule things are in modern times. So he took a little child and set him in the midst of him, and when he had taken him into his arms, so he takes this little child and he kind of puts his arms around him and he says, "Whoever receives one of these little children in my name receives me. And whoever receives me receives not me, but him who sent me." So here's how to be great. Hug children. And minister to children. Serve people that cannot do a single thing for you, and then you'll be great. Do they feel chastised? No, they're zealots. Of course they do not feel chastised. So, John answers him and saying, this is the disciple Jesus loved. This is the soft one. This is the one who is the touchy-feely one among this group, okay? And he says, "Teacher, we saw someone who does not follow us casting out demons in your name." Say, what did he just say? If you receive a little child, you're receiving me, right? And this, you're doing this in my name. That's what he just said. So, "Teacher, we saw someone who does not follow us casting demons in your name, and we forbade him because he does not follow us." Now, what's John saying? Okay, so you're saying, minister to children. Who can do that? Like, women can do that. We mighty warriors? Do we zealots who are going to defeat the Romans and then take over the world? And you're telling us that we are great if we do women's work? Seriously? So you must mean something else. I know what it is. You're just saying this to us 12. This could never apply just to anybody, right? Isn't that what you're saying, Jesus? It has to be just us. Doesn't it? But Jesus says, no, it can be anybody. Include somebody as big a knucklehead as you guys. But Jesus says, do not forbid him. For no one who works a miracle in my name can soon afterward speak evil of me. Okay? There's at least going to be some period of time when somebody does something right where they've got some forward momentum. Now, they may turn and put the gear shift in the other way and do something idiotic shortly thereafter, okay? That's even counterproductive. But if they're doing something positive, encourage them. They're on our side, at least for this time. For he who is not against us is on our side. It's just two sides, right? There's not a middle. For whoever gives you a cup of water to drink in my name because you belong to Christ, me, the Messiah, assuredly I say to you, he will by no means lose his reward. So first he says, no, you're not special. Anybody who does stuff in my name, including to little children, is equally important as you. So what were they disputing on the road? How great they are. And Jesus comes in the first thing and knocks them all the way down. There's nothing special about you in the sense of your ability to serve. And then he says, but I have chosen you. And I've chosen you to be a special ministry for me. So if anybody comes and helps you, like you can help a child, I'm going to give them the same reward that I would give you. So, can anybody get this massive reward you're after? Yes. And they can even get it by helping you knuckleheaded idiots that I'm towing around with me. And in spite of how dumb you are and how clueless you are, I'm going to give you the opportunity to minister to the world in my name. Isn't that encouraging? Can you believe the humility of these guys to write this down? But he's not finished yet. And he goes on to the 12, the disciples. But let me give you a warning, okay? You're my ministers. If someone helps you, they're helping me. But let me just tell you something. Whoever causes one of these little ones, like these children, who believe in me to stumble. So now he's taking the metaphor of the child and applying it to any of the children of God who have believed in Jesus. Anybody who causes one of these little ones to believe in me to stumble, it would be better for him if a millstone would hung around his neck and he were thrown into the sea. Now let me just ask you. If you take a millstone, which is a rock, you know, maybe, what, 3 feet in diameter, typical, and a couple feet thick. So let's just say it weighs 1,000 pounds. Okay? So if you take a rock, and it has a hole in the middle where the grain pours down, right? So you tie a rope through the middle of the hole, and now you have like a washer on a string, except it weighs 1,000 pounds, and you tie the other end to your neck, and you go to a cliff, and you throw the rock off, what's going to happen? Yeah, you're not going to live very much longer, right? So he says there's two scenarios you can have. One is you go out and lead my children astray. The other is you get thrown in the ocean with a millstone around your neck. Which one would you pick? Well, the one you ought to pick is the millstone, because that's going to be way better for you than if you lead one of my children astray. Do you think this is a stern warning? That's hyperbole, of course, but the hyperbole is going to keep expanding. If your hand causes you to sin, cut it off. Okay? Who would want to be without a hand on purpose? You want your hand, right? But you're better off to be without a hand than to sin. It's better for you to enter into life maimed rather than having two hands go to hell. Now, is he telling his disciples, his 12, who have believed in him? Don't talk about Judas, okay? But the 12 who believed in him, is he telling them, if you want to go to heaven, you can't sin? A lot of people take this to mean that, okay? Because otherwise you go to hell. Is he saying that? Would that even make any sense whatsoever? You're disputing on the road among me, so you're going to hell. You wouldn't have to go through all this other stuff if it was that, right? No, he's saying Gehenna. Okay, he's talking about Gehenna. These Jewish guys, they know what Gehenna is. It's child sacrifice. It's burning worms. It's sewage. It's rot and destruction. So it's the opposite of life. You want to live out there in the dump? There's places in the world where people do live in the dump. It's all they have to live. Is that something that people generally aspire to? To say, gee, I wish I could go live in the dump? No. But he says, go to Gehenna, into the fire that will never be quenched, where the worm does not die and the fire is not quenched. See, out in Gehenna, there's always rot and decay and destruction and worms. And there's always smoldering fire out there. Because it's never pleasant in Gehenna, in the Valley of Hinnom. It's never pleasant. There's not like a season where you say, oh, this is the season when we should go picnic in the Valley of Hinnom. No, that doesn't exist. It's always bad. There's not a season of life where you say, oh, well, you know, I'm 19. And everybody knows between 19 and 25, you should sow your wild oats. Because you can go and sin a ton during that time period, and there'll be no negative consequences. No. Your body can survive the abuse of better, but there's still negative consequences to sin. The fact that there's a delay often in those consequences doesn't mean that you're not still giving yourself Gehenna. Okay? Oh, gee, while I'm young, I could go live in the trash dump and I probably wouldn't catch pneumonia or tuberculosis. So why wouldn't I do that? Because nobody that with a right mind wants to live in the trash dump. That's why. See, that's the point. Okay, so he goes on. He has kind of says that two more times. You pluck out your eye and so forth. And then he ends with this. Remember, they started with trying to be great among themselves. So go down to verse 49. And he ends with this. For everyone, Jesus still talking now, for everyone will be seasoned with fire. Okay? So who gets seasoned with fire? Everyone. Okay? And we've read that before, right? We shall all appear before the judgment seat of Christ. Who appears before the judgment seat of Christ? All. He's writing to believers in 2 Corinthians 5. Okay? He's writing to believers. It's writing to a church. We shall all appear before the judgment seat of Christ to receive rewards for deeds done in the flesh, whether good or bad. Therefore, knowing the terror of the Lord, persuade men. 1 Corinthians 3. We're all going to bring our works, our deeds, to the Lord to see if we get in. No. Our entrance ticket's something Jesus bought for us already. We don't have to have a ticket. He got a ticket. He's already given the usher the tickets. Okay? It's for deeds done in the flesh, to reward, to see what we did. And we bring it all, and what's it tested with? Fire. And if it's wood, hay, and stubble, what happens? It burns. And if it's gold, silver, precious stones, what happens? It gets purified. Right? So we're all seasoned with fire. And we don't have to wait till the judgment seat to be seasoned with fire, do we? Because this book started with, consider it joy, brethren, when you encounter various trials. Those are fiery trials. And that happens in this life. And when we're persecuted, or when we go through difficulties, whether really in many respects, whether we caused them or whether they happened and we couldn't do anything about it, those are fiery trials. And the question is, what are we going to do through those fiery trials? We're being tested. We're being refined. The refining process is happening now. It just keeps on going. Everyone will be seasoned with fire, and every sacrifice will be seasoned with salt. So now we have a picture. These Jews, they go to sacrifice all the time, right? And there's a few sacrifices you burn all the way up. But for the most part, the sacrifice is a barbecue. So we've all been to pit barbecues, right? Cooper's. You go to Cooper's barbecue. You open the pit. All the stuff's in there. Well, that's what they did. They barbecue the stuff. And the priests got part. And they got to eat the rest with their family and have a festival. Because, potluck is biblical. Everybody's bringing something and they cook it and they go have it with their family, right? Because the Lord's table is a celebration of fellowship. And there's nothing new about that, okay? So, now everyone's seasoned with fire and every sacrifice is seasoned with salt. So now we're a sacrifice. What do you want the lamb that you killed and roasted, what's its primary purpose once you roast it? It wants it to taste good, right? So if you want it to taste good, what do you always include a little of? Salt, right? Seasonings. You want a little bit of seasoning. Not too much, but not too little. So why do you want seasoning? So it'll taste good. Because the sacrifice is offered to please. In the case of sacrifice in the Jewish system, there's two groups that get pleased. One is God, because you gave something up. His people are the priests, and part of what you raised that was yours, you've given to the priests. And you've also done it in the way God asked you to do it. So there's an obedience there. And God says, well, that makes me happy. Except when he says it doesn't make him happy, which is when your heart's not in it. And he says, you know, the sacrifices you're bringing me, I'm just going to puke it out. because your hearts are not in this. You're bringing this like you're obeying me, and you're not obeying me everywhere else, and you're obeying me here, so I'm just going to puke it out. I'm going to spit it out. But this is supposed to be part of the way you live your life, not a silo. Paul tells us we're to be a living sacrifice, right? And it's the reasonable, logical thing to do. This is Romans 12. We want to be a Romans 12 church. That's what James is talking about here, the same thing. So, hey, can I go up on the barbecue spit? I would love to be a tasty meal for God. And I know that in order to be a tasty meal, I need some salt. Okay, well, where does that come from? Salt is good, but if the salt loses its flavor, how will you season it? So now you've got salt, and you pour it on there, and it just tastes like dirt. It's not salty anymore. So if our salt is all turned into dirt, we're going to have a barbecue that doesn't taste good. So here's the bottom line to the 12 disciples. Here's the lesson. The lesson's right here. So here's what I want you guys to do. Have salt in yourselves. And have peace with one another. Started with them disputing on the road, right? Here's what I think he's saying. We're to be a living sacrifice to please who? God, okay? So, love God by doing what He wants you to do. Ever heard that before? And have peace with one another. Is there a commandment that goes with that one? Like, love your neighbor as yourself, right? And guess what? You 12, you're each other's neighbor. Okay? So, love God, love others. That'd make a good slogan for a church, maybe, right? So, the greatest commandment. You know, there's no greater commandment than to love God. How do you do that with all your heart? How do you do that? You do what God asks you to do. If you do that, what are you doing? You're creating salt for the world, is actually what you're doing. You're becoming a living sacrifice that pleases God. And if you have peace with one another, don't try to one-up one another and serve them saying, I'm better than you. But instead, try to one-up one another and saying, I'm going to serve these children maybe better than you. Okay? If you want to one-up, do that. Of course, you don't want to one-up at all. So that's the point. Now, Andrew, I'll try to think about this salted with fire, salted with salt. If you're salted with fire, yeah, what you're saying is every time we get the fiery trials, it's an opportunity to trust and be a living sacrifice there as well. Okay, that makes sense. Well, what that would potentially mean is the fire is pleasing God and the salt's pleasing is serving one another, which is kind of the same idea, I suppose. Okay, but we have fire in here twice. One is the fire in Gehenna, and the other is the fire of Christ judging. Okay, and so which one do you want? So you get to pick the fire you have, but you don't get a pick of, I want a life without fire. That's not a life you get. You get the smoldering fire of judgment in the trash heap, or you get the refining fire of Christ to turn us into precious gold and silver. So when you see this hell word, you got to look behind it and see, is this Hades or Gehenna? And if it's Gehenna, ask yourself, what is this valley of death? What is this picture supposed to be? It could be talking about afterlife. It's most likely going to be talking about something in this life, and it can, of course, be in both because they're very connected. Okay, so back to James. James is saying your tongue is the gear shift that connects you to these entire worlds. And so this Gehenna, that is what connecting into the world's system gives you. Death, destruction. And the way you do that, sin, and the alternative is not to sin. And how do you not sin? Well, you think thoughts after God. You have the implanted word. You supplant the thoughts and the speech that puts you into the world system. That's how you do that. And is this to determine whether we get in or not? No, it's to determine whether our life is going to be a winning life or a losing life. It's consequences that we're talking about. Okay? So now we come to chapter 4. Let me just do like the first point of chapter 4. Where do wars and fights come from among you? Do they not come from your desires for pleasure that war in your members? You lust and do not have. You murder and covet and cannot obtain. You fight in war, yet you do not have because you do not ask. You ask and do not receive because you ask amiss, that you may spend it on your pleasures. Okay? So now James comes and says, hey, where do you think wars and fighting is? Where do you think arguing about who the greatest comes from? Well, when you're doing that, which of these two drivetrains is kicking in? Okay? It's the world system, right? Now, where does that come from? We got this believe, speak, do. Believe, speak, do. That's the way world works, right? And this is a biblical theme. If you believe the wrong things and speak the wrong things, you're going to do the wrong things. If you do the wrong things, you're going to believe the wrong things. If you speak the wrong things, you're going to believe the wrong things. It's all connected, right? So how does this start? Well, it starts from our desires. And this word desires is a word you might recognize. Hedon. Hedonism, right? That's where we get our word hedonism from. Desires. So we have these desires for pleasure that war in our members. So now, first thing you could say is, does that mean desire is something we should try to get rid of? Has anybody ever thought that before? I have. I've thought it before. You thought it before too? Yeah, I wish I could get rid of desire. Not that desire, just desire. And you could say, that desire, but that leads to, I should just get rid of desire. And that's not what he's going to tell us here. You lust and do not have. Now, is lust bad? Raise your hand if you think lust is bad. Raise your hand if you think lust is good. Yeah, okay, raise your hand if you say it depends. Okay, it depends, wins, okay. What does it depend on? What you're lusting for. Exactly. Is it good to pant after the Word of God and lust for it? Is it good to lust that your children learn to make good decisions and know what good values are? Okay. Is it good to lust after controlling your children so they won't embarrass you? No. Okay, so it kind of depends on what it is you're lusting after, doesn't it? Does God lust? Yes, He does. He lusts. Let's look at that real quickly. It's in Galatians 5:17. For the flesh lusts against the spirit. So here we got the drivetrain, what James is calling the world and Gehenna and demonic and all those things. Paul calls the flesh. So the flesh lusts against the spirit. And of course the spirit is connected to the wisdom of God, the Word of God, the Word of God made flesh, God Himself. Okay? So this is all happening inside of us. We have this war going on. The flesh lusts against the spirit, and the spirit lusts against the flesh. And these are contrary to one another, so you do not do the things you wish. So they're fighting. And what is it that they're lusting after? What is it that they're panting over? Yes, I think that's right. Control over you. And who gets to decide that? Drivetrain. You know, I've got the gear shift knob. I get to decide which one. And how do I decide that? What I speak. What I do. Which is based on what I think. And what I say. And you're all, you know, what is a thought? It's just something you say that you don't articulate with your mouth, perhaps. Right? But these words are going around in your head all the time, aren't they? You have this conversation going on. You should do that. That person, they hate you. They're focusing on you. Everything's about you. You need to pay them back. I was with some guys recently, and they told me that in men's ministry, one of the things that they have learned is every man has a tape of things his dad told to him playing in his head all the time. Isn't that interesting? You know what I have? A fiddle. There's fiddle tunes going around in my head all the time. So in my case, I kind of got away with that, but now I play fiddle tunes all the time. It's happened to me, but it's kind of innocuous, all right? You know, you've got that conversation going on, and why is that conversation happening? Well, in large part, it's because there's an argument going on, not over who's greatest, but over whether you should, you know, where you should put your gear level. That's happening all the time. And the flesh is a ventriloquist. And the flesh does not want to say, hey, by the way, this is Gehenna speaking. Death, destruction, maiming, loss, burning, that's what you should have. No, he never does that, right? It's always, this is you. I'm speaking as you. I'm not a third party. I'm you. And if that doesn't work, it's like, oh, I'm God. This is what God would want for you. This is what God would want you to have. Well, we don't have because we ask amiss, that we may spend it on our pleasures. Which means what? What does that mean? That's hedon again, pleasures, okay? What does that mean again? What does that mean? If it says you ask for the wrong things, you should ask for the right things, then it means it's good to what? It's good to ask. It's good to desire. It's good to want. Just want the right stuff. We ask amiss. How does that work? Well, there's a prayer from the 70s that I thought I would read. And in order to understand this, I just have to say for some of you who are not old enough to know this, to explain what dialing for dollars is. It was a franchise, and the local TV station would have like the weatherman or somebody like that. You'd mail in your phone number, and back in those days, there was a book that they printed that had everybody's phone number in it. And you would put your phone number on there, and they would go through, and or your name, and they would go through and look up your phone number, and at the first of the show, they would give you a password, like, you know, Herman. And so, if you got the call and you knew the password, you got however much money was in the pot. If nobody answers or if they don't know the password, the pot would increase one more week. Great drama. Okay? So this is it. This is the prayer. This actually played on the radio. Oh Lord, won't you buy me a Mercedes Benz? My friends all drive Porsches. I must make amends. Worked hard all my lifetime. No help from my friends. So Lord, won't you buy me a Mercedes-Benz? Oh, Lord, won't you buy me a color TV? It used to be expensive to have a color TV back in the day. Okay, dialing for dollars is trying to find me. I wait for delivery each day until 3. So, Lord, won't you buy me a color TV? Lord, won't you buy me a night on the town? It's like, if God really loved me, He would make me popular in Gehenna. I'm counting on you, Lord. Please don't let me down. Prove that you love me and buy the next round. Oh, Lord, won't you buy me a night on the town? Well, this is kind of how we think. I think this is where atheism comes from. I tried God. I asked Him for something. What is it? Janis Joplin. Janis Joplin. Well, and poor Janis, you know. She was a prophetess. And poor Janice, she died of a heroin overdose. But let me just close with this. What does James tell us to pray for here? Well, I started looking for that. So I go, well, so what are we supposed to ask for? Well, I don't see anything. I don't see anything. And I didn't see anything until all the way at the end of 5. And He asked us to pray for two things in 5:15. He asked us to pray for other people when they're sick. And then He says, Elijah prayed and the rain dried up. So you ought to do stuff like that. Well, that's weird, isn't it? So I pray for a drought. Well, no. What Elijah was doing is he was praying for judgment on an unrighteous nation so they would come back to the Lord. So pray for the welfare of others and pray for righteousness for your nation and community. That's kind of a boring... Well, who wants to have a prayer time like that, right? I want to have a prayer time where it's all about me. I want to have a prayer time where all of my problems are dealt with. Well, you know, the Bible does tell us, take your cares and cast them to the Lord. And that can be done in prayer. But it's not so He will commiserate with you on your problems so you can take them back again and now you have someone else feeling sorry for you. It's so you can leave them there and then go on and live freely of those cares. That's the idea. So we're supposed to ask with an external view. And guess what happens when we do that? We're getting eye off of self. And where's the fundamental problem in the first place? We've heard it all the way through James, right? You don't have a circumstance problem, young man. You don't have a circumstance problem, old man. You don't have a circumstance problem, ma'am. You have a self problem. Because you have these desires, and you become pregnant with them. And then you birth them. And then they grow up, and then they become death, Gehenna. Okay? So stop nurturing things that turn into Gehenna. And what do you do instead? Well, get in vitro. Get a new word. Get the implanted word that is able to save you from all this stuff. And let it grow up and nurture that. and then become constructive and productive. And the way you do that is with an external focus to become a living sacrifice and season the world with salt and bring light into the world and serve children and do things for people that can't pay you back, at least in this life, that you can see. And do things for one another to make the team the strong thing. You know, it's 12 for one and one for all. Not me at the head of the pack. And do things that bring light into the world so they can see God. Do that. And then you're not thinking about self. And now you're putting it in the gear that has the infinite power of the universe. And, of course, we call that superhero. When somebody has infinite power, don't we? A superhero in God's kingdom looks like somebody that serves children. And thanks God for your word that has the power to deliver us from self. I pray that we'll receive it. We'll nurture it. We'll speak it. We'll do it. And that you'll make us reinforcing citadels of truth and of grace. And I pray that you'll help us not choose to live in a trash dump, but rather choose to live in the glory of your kingdom and in the rays of your light and bask in the exhilaration of the desires of our heart actually being fulfilled because we're going after the one who made the desires in the first place, and you're fulfilling them because we're getting them satisfied the way you intended us to. And we know, Lord, that our fundamental problem that's standing in the way is us. And I pray that you'll help us see that. Help us help one another, lift up one another to see that, and help us overcome it, Lord, because you've given us the resurrection power to do it. In Jesus' name, amen.